All right. Good morning, everybody. I call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, December 5th, 2017. A couple notes. First of all, we're pulling additional items number three. That was the consideration of an MOU with Story County Medical Center. Apparently, they found a different route to go, so we won't mess with that. And then there's a pay rate on our personnel action forms for Laura, and I'm not even going to attempt her last name. It was listed at $15 an hour. It really should be $15.44 per hour. So we'll make those two changes to our agenda. The other thing I would note, Supervisor Olson, is that I believe you made an offer that if all our clocks were set to the correct and consistent time, you were going to buy bagels for our facilities department. And I'm just, on behalf of facilities, I'm suggesting that it's time for you to pay a visit to Panera because they're all right and consistent.
I will do that tomorrow. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. With that, I'd ask everybody to please join America. And join the board as we honor America with Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. I see Linda moving to the microphone. Linda, have at it.
Good morning, Linda.
Good morning. Good morning. I can't stay till the end of the meeting today, so I'd ask your indulgence to allow me to make a brief statement now that's not related to an agenda item.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Our community lost a wise and gentle, but yet fearless leader when Judy Hoffman left us last week. Many of you remember her service on the East Planning and Zoning Commission and the East City Council, as well as many other boards and commissions. She was also very involved in county government issues, as a search of her name on the county's website will show. I knew Judy best as a lobbyist for 23 years for the League of Women Voters of Iowa. During that time, she led several important efforts, among them revamping Iowa's redistricting law, opposing reinstatement of the death penalty, and prohibiting smoking in restaurants and other public places. I was often in a position to learn from her. I learned a lot, but in the interest of time, will condense it to what I consider three guiding principles. Have the courage to say what needs to be said, even when it's unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
Take care in the words you choose, as language has power. And third, that one can disagree without being disagreeable. We will all miss Judy. Let us honor her memory by not forgetting these lessons. Thank you for the time.
Absolutely. Completely appropriate. Thank you, Linda.
Well said.
Anybody else wishing to address the board on any topic? And seeing no one, we'll move on into our agenda. The first item is discussion and consideration of Supervisor Olson's inappropriate presentation to the Ames City Council on November 14, 2017. So a couple points here as we get going. First of all, I've been questioned as to why this item appears where it appears on our agenda. I've been questioned about the use of the wording, and so let me just clear those up. It's number one on our agenda because this is a big deal. Anytime a Board of Supervisor member starts acting outside the scope of their authority, it's a big, big deal, and it comes first. Second, the use of the word inappropriate in reference to presentation, that's simple. It was an inappropriate presentation to the Ames City Council. So let me back up and talk about what happened. In July, this board determined that we would ask the Ames City Council if they wanted to partner with us in doing a housing study. In fact, a letter went from this board to the Ames City Council making just that request. They finally got to it on November 14th, and Supervisor Olson went to be ready to answer any questions they might have and help them in their decision whether they wanted to participate with us or not. That's fine. What's not fine is over the 20-minute conversation between Supervisor Olson and the Ames City Council, there are multiple points where Supervisor Olson is negotiating with the City Council. She's making offers on our behalf to the City Council. It is absolutely unclear in multiple points who she represents. She was there as a Board of Supervisors member to answer questions, and she absolutely can represent Supervisor Olson, but she can't represent this board without authority. She didn't have authority. It would be different for me if this were an isolated incident, but we have been here repeatedly over the last 11 months talking about Supervisor Olson exceeding her authority and not participating as a full member of this board, and so it needed to be on here. Now, to Supervisor Olson's credit, from my point of view, I didn't get to watch this till Thursday. I had a wild month of November. I was told by several people, some that were there and some that watched it on TV, that I really needed to watch the video of her presentation. And I didn't get to it till Thursday. And when I got to it, I was dumbfounded. I was really, really disappointed in what I saw. To Supervisor Olson's credit, she was in the office while I was watching the video and recognized, I believe, that I was really disappointed in what I saw, and she came into my office immediately and offered a tearful apology at that point. Her and I have had two subsequent conversations about it. So Thursday afternoon, when she was in my office, I really appreciated the tearful apology, and she asked me at that point if we could not take it any further and not have it be part of a public meeting. And I told her I'd think about it. And so I thought about it overnight, and I came back Friday, and my stance was and is, and I think Supervisor Olson agrees with this, no, we need to do this in the public. We need to be completely transparent. Your presentation was public. We need to do it publicly. And you agreed with me at that point, whether you still agree with me or not. And then we discussed it a little yesterday, simply to try to understand. I think at one point yesterday, Laura, you thought I was more worked up about the word "we" rather than the overall presentation, and I think we got that cleared up. And the commitment I made to you then, and I'll make to you now, is this can be a 5-minute conversation or this can be an hour conversation, and it's really up to you. I think I'm really clear on what my perspective is of this and why I think this is a big deal and a big problem. And with that, I'll turn to you.
Sure. I don't characterize one part of what you just said the same way, is that actually what you put to me as a question was, if the situation were reversed, what would you do? Okay? And we were both going to take it overnight on Thursday to discuss this. And I said to you 15 minutes later, I'd be angry, would probably come in and confront you. Okay? Excuse me. But as far as requesting that it be put on the agenda, I would not do that. So I want to make clear that I did not ask that it not be put on the agenda at any point. I agree with Supervisor Sanders entirely that based on the fact that some of the original conversation to me is there was a lack of clarity, that we certainly need to clear it up. Also, as Supervisor Sanders pointed out, that his consideration about would we handle this internally or should it go here to the Board of Supervisors was based upon his concern that at some later point it could come back to reflect poorly on him if we were seen to be negotiating behind the scenes. And I agree with transparency also. So I would like to clear that up, that I'm not afraid of it being on the agenda today, okay? The discussion was, in fact, related to what would I do if the situation's were reversed, okay? So.
And you said you wouldn't have put it on an agenda, and you're suggesting that you didn't ask me at that point to not put it on the agenda, and I told you I'm going to think about it overnight. My tendency would be to agree with you. I'm going to think about it overnight, and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
You did say your tendency was to agree with me, but...
And what was I agreeing with?
We were agreeing about whether we would put it on the agenda or not, but I didn't ever specifically say I wouldn't, that please don't put it on the agenda because of me, okay? You asked if the situation were reversed on it, okay? This comes back to what you described about my understanding on Thursday what the issue was versus what then the issue was on Friday. Okay, so I am in agreement with Supervisor Sanders in several points here. All right. The first one is that I used poor wording in saying and not making it clear that when I threw out alternatives for the city council, that I used we.
There's no question about that. You can watch the video, okay? In fact, when I went into your office that Thursday, because, yes, I did become aware you were pretty loud, okay? I mean, I was sitting in my office doing paperwork as you were saying things. And I immediately, and I knew I'd use we after the fact, but I never intended in any way to negotiate. What my intention was is to try and find out if they would be interested in participating on a lower level, on a narrower scope than what their letter invited them to do, which was to participate in a partnership. Well, part of our discussion yesterday that we had yesterday morning in the clarification about whether we were talking about the word we, you know, in representing on that forum, or whether I even had the authority to say anything other than may I get a yes or no. Okay. I'd like to put that in the timeline here and go back to July 11th when we discussed possible issues that could come up. If you go back and watch the July 11th video, you know, I discuss about what a potential process might be like, discuss things like task force, et cetera, in general terms, okay? And certainly our agreement in writing the letter was to ask the city to join with us in some fashion. I agree with you on that, okay? And I think that had the original time frame that I had discussed with city staff, one city staff member, for going on the agenda had been enforced, I think you are completely right that I did not have any authority to go in and do anything more than pretty much, yes, thank you, I'll go back to the board if you don't have any questions, and we'll talk from there. Okay, I'm with you on that, Rick. 4 months went by. And in the 4 month period of time, I'd had conversations with city staff. And it became clear that the parameters and what they were going to recommend to the board was not to participate in what we were hoping. And so when I went to speak that night, I'd also had a conversation with a city council member who had asked me to address some of the points, and that was Jim Garden, by the way, okay, who asked me to address in my presentation when I finally got in front of the city council some of the other things that could be done and options. So I didn't just jump out there, all right, with this. And so by the time I got before them, 4 months later, other information had become available. I had kept you aware here at the board table that we were having difficulty getting in front of the council, having difficulty, you know, as I said, it was 4 months. I believe I'd have to go back and check every one of our updates, liaison updates through the four-month period to see when I actually updated about that city staff thought that there might be a problem in participation. I'd have to go back and see that, or if, in fact, that was something that I made in a comment passing in the hall about, well, we may have to look at another avenue. Okay. So I feel I kept people apprised to the extent that I could. So going in that night, I did have what I thought was the expectation based upon my conversation on about, well, it was very late October with city staff, that their memo was going to indicate that some of the details about what the city staff and I had talked about, as far as, because the city staff had made recommendations back to me about, you know, maybe only wanting to do a membership on a task force, or definitely your staff's going to need to take the lead. These are the things that I believe are the comments that are in question from that night. So when I got there that night, and the city staff basically just said, we're too busy to do it, and that was the comments that Vanessa Baker made, for me getting up to say this, I was conveying information, and I did a poor job of it. I'm going to tell you, the wording after the 3.5-hour meeting they'd had, it was a very intense meeting to sit in the audience. I can't imagine how drained they were at that night, that I did, in fact, offer what my own personal solutions and what city staff and I had talked about. So coming from then, trying to look at your point of view, Rick, about that I had absolutely no right to do it, because you did say this to me yesterday, I had no right to go in front of the city council and do anything other than answer questions, which I did, and a couple of those responses that are poorly worded with the we are based upon questions that were asked me out of the meeting, but certainly I felt needed to be conveyed to everybody, and I did a bad job of it. And to look at how do we function as a board here. Part of what I believe we do is we're problem solvers and we try to create collaborations. So as I sat there that night listening to the staff present for the city, and I realized our goal was, and was from the very beginning, if you go back to the July 11th conversation, to try and have the city involved in some way. And therefore, when I got up, I offered my ideas for that. And I said, we instead. So there's, you know, I get it. Okay. So the why did I feel that I was empowered as one supervisor giving suggestions is because we, all of us, and I'm going to go to we, all three of us, okay, we go to meetings all the time, and we go to try to find common ground. We go to try and initiate projects going forward, and we go to try to make things happen. And this particular situation, in one way, I guess, is fortuitous that it's on video, so that everyone can watch the entire 20-some minutes. See what I said, see how what I did right, see what I did wrong, and see if I in fact did what I believe that both you and Marty do at times, which is go to entities who we're interested in partnering with and talking about what would be the possibilities. I readily admit that I was not there to negotiate. I have no power to negotiate on behalf of the board. I believe our county attorney sitting right there or other delegated people are the people who would actually negotiate. Okay? So I, one of the other things that you said to me, Rick, is that there were a couple of council members who were not certain who I was speaking for at various points in time. And I went back and I looked at that video. And I believe at least twice, point out that I was one supervisor and that I would need to take things back to the board. And, you know, Councilman Garten even said, well, can you take back to the board? But I know it was a long meeting. It was a draining meeting for them. And with me not saying every word correctly and appropriately, I guess, in the right order, I can see where there'd be confusion. And I take full responsibility for there being confusion based upon my words. But I never had any intent to usurp my authority or to negotiate in any way or to indicate that I had the power to negotiate. And based upon, I believe, at least two of the council members who were there that night, Thomas had made on the video, indicate that they understood I would have to go back. So at that point, I think really we're down to is did the July 11th meeting, when I asked if I could go to them, all right, you know, I would answer questions, I would explain, did that in fact allow me as a single supervisor to offer options when they weren't interested in the original concept, because the options that I've laid out as my suggestions and things that I talked about with city staff were narrower in scope than what we were seeking from them at the time. And that's all I can say.
Well, so, and I really, really appreciate that, Loris. And so I tend to agree, I guess it's apropos that Linda Merkin started the meeting with our friend Judy Hoffman, her three pillars. Words do matter. They absolutely
I
do matter.
That all the time.
Absolutely. But this is not about words. This is about apparent offers and negotiation where it was at least unclear who you were representing. And frankly, I think worse than that. And here's the part that really concerns me. You said a couple times in there, or at least implied, that something from July 11th to November 14th changed that allowed you more flexibility. So you said early in your talk that if it had gone the timing that Ames had laid out, then I would be 100% right. You'd have had no authority to do that. But since it drug on, as long as it drug on, and since you had subsequent conversations with city staff, somehow you're implying that opened the door, something in there opened the door for what you did to be appropriate. And what I'm telling you is I believe that's 100% wrong. This board never took any action from July 11th until November 14th. Never took any action. What you were able to do on July 12th is no different than what you were able to do on November 14th. And so you keep tying this to wording and confusion. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying this is all about you behaving appropriately as a supervisor, behaving appropriately within the scope of authority that we have. And fortunately, we have County Attorney Jessica Reynolds here today who has reviewed this. And I don't want there to be any confusion. This is not about wording. This is not about... you misstated something. This is about you exceeding your authority as a board of supervisors member. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But that's what this is about for me.
May I ask a question of the two of you? Okay. It seems like it appears to me like that we had a discussion. We discussed the concept of wanting the city involved, and the there's a factor in this is that we actually extended a letter. A lot of times I'm going to come back to we discuss here at the board that, you know, we want to do something and somebody says, I'll do that or I'll pick it up. And in fact, we have many instances where there's never a discussion. Someone just goes and starts to be involved. Usually it's because at the beginning of the year when we set the committee assignments, it's related to what we are a liaison on a board or we're participants in the board. Okay. And so there's a goal involved. So as we don't expect or require each one of us to come back every week to clarify whether that goal is still in place or not. We trust each other, okay? And it's clearly you don't trust that my intention was never to exceed or negotiate. But we trust that you'll go out and you, as a single supervisor, will make suggestions. And that it's pretty clear, I think it's very clear, especially when we're dealing with other government entities, okay, that anything's going to have to come back to this board. That anything that you discuss, Marty went to the Colville City Council last night, correct? Okay. So anything that you discuss or say, well, maybe the county could do this or whatever, came from you. Right?
Personally, yes.
Okay, all right. So, did you exceed your authority?
No, I asked you some questions about the E911 proposal for the new radio equipment we're looking to purchase. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I really spoke to last night.
Okay.
Because we have a meeting of the E911 board next Wednesday night. So,
You're trying to muddy the water. One second, Marty, and then I'll come to you. You're trying to muddy the water here for us. And again, it's not this is not about words. It's not about any of us going out and doing our job as supervisor. It's about you in front of the Ames City Council making representations that very clearly indicated offers and negotiations on behalf of this board of supervisors. And it's not appropriate. Jessica, I'm going to ask that you come up because we need clarity on this. We can go round and round. Marty, I'll come to you first because you were asked the question. And I'll just ask you this. Did you make any offers or negotiations with the Colville City Council on behalf of this board last night?
I was there on an informational basis as I normally am, and that's all I fulfilled. On the week of the 14th when you went, and several subsequent follow-ups as I'm the non-Ames guy when you get into settings where you have people that were both at the meeting and had discussed the meeting, it left an unease in the capacity that you were questioning things. You were trying to steer what was perceived as steering the council into a decision in regards to moving them faster to get to an outcome than they were prepared to do. And I would just leave it at the fact that the language is inartful. that the perception was the fact that, you know, here you came as one citizen representing the board that you sat on, which gives you increased standing to direct the city council of Ames to do something I don't think we were prepared to do.
Okay.
And that was the takeaways. That was conveyed to me in a sense that it just like, I knew that you went to speak. We knew that. You told us. And I just assumed that's all that you did. But when the subsequent follow-up becomes the conversation of, was she there in behalf of the board? Well, she represented the board to be able to answer any questions that were asked of her in regards to what we were thinking, but not to give direction or promote haste into an outcome.
Okay.
Marty, did you get contacted by anybody who was at that meeting questioning what happened?
I had people come to me to talk about the meeting, expressly seek me out, and I thought that was surprising.
Thank you. So, County Attorney Reynolds, Laura's actually referenced something involving you when she said, when I was watching the video, I was a little loud. And unfortunately for you, you were on the other end of the phone when I was being a little loud. When I was watching this video, I was in disbelief at what I was seeing. And so I think the exact conversation we had is I called you and I asked if you had seen this video, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Have you seen the entire video?
Well, good morning. For the record, my name is Jessica Reynolds. I'm a Story County attorney. I have had the opportunity to view the video and review its contents in its entirety. I do have a statement that I'd like to make here today. Again, I'm before this Board of Supervisors regarding scope of authority. This is an issue that I've covered with you all extensively in the past. My comments today will be direct because at this time, I believe it's necessary and in the best interest of Story County that they are. Ms. Olson, at times in the Ames City Council meeting, you were acting on behalf of the Board of Supervisors without board approval. The problem with your comments to the City Council is that at times they exceeded the scope of the letter of July 13, 2017, which set forth this board's position as the entity of Story County. The terms you used in the council meeting when you exceeded the scope of the letter are problematic legally. For example, quote, I'm inviting you to continue if you really want to be a partner in it with some alternate terms. You then go on to specify the alternate terms. Legally, this is a counteroffer. Okay. Quote, my top priority was to extend an offer to you. Legally indicates an offer. Luckily, in this instance, nobody accepted the offers that you made. It's lucky because those offers were invalid and could embroil the county in legal issues involving apparent authority versus actual authority. Supervisor Olson, if you have any questions about the scope of your authority or your ability to make offers on behalf of Story County, please do not hesitate to contact me. I am available to you for consultation 24/7, which is why you have my cell phone number. I encourage you to use that. I do not want to see the county involved in issues where you've made an invalid offer to someone and they've accepted the offer believing you had the authority to bind the county when you didn't. It's in the county's best interest that we avoid this. Supervisor Olson, you are one member of a three-person board. You are not empowered to act alone. You are not empowered to act alone. Whether it's directing staff, disciplining staff, making offers or counteroffers to other municipalities. I remind you of my letter dated July 11th, 2017, and ask you to review the advice contained therein. My advice to you at this time is that you should carefully consider the scope of your authority and not exceed it in the future. Thank you.
That came up yesterday. Supervisor Sanders said, I do not want to ever embroil or get the county into that particular situation where we would have a legal liability.
I don't want that either.
Yeah, so so I recognized and did not recognize at the time on that, but certainly recognize now that the concern that you have. We discussed, Rick and I discussed the fact that had they said, well, yeah, I think we'd be interested in having somebody on a task force, I know you have to trust me on this, But this would have been, well, that's something that would have to go back to the Board of Supervisors. I now recognize from what you're saying that it could be interpreted as an offer. Okay.
If you were able to represent the offer that was made in that letter that was approved by the whole board, and that's it. And so if there was something that you wanted to counter-propose, you needed to come back to this board and discuss it and get authority to do so. I find it very simple. It's very simple.
My major concern going forward, because I take this, advice that is from our county attorney, my major concern going forward is that we all are held to the same standards of the July 11, 2017 letter. I hear this advice is to me today, but that I think it's good for all of us.
Wait. Please. You did this on July 11th. You're doing it again now. The reality is, Marty and I both operate within the scope of our authority. If you got an example where you think we have operated outside the scope of our authority, then get it on an agenda and let's talk about it. But don't try to equivocate and say, oh, we all do it and it's good advice for all of us. No, this is advice for you.
I do believe that there are multiple opportunities for all of us to be placed in a situation where it could be interpreted that discussion goes toward negotiation. I understand that you feel that I legally met that threshold, that my words that night met the threshold. I understand. That's what you're saying to me.
I got it.
Okay. All right. I got it. Okay. So, but yes, I just want to make sure that, especially because you talked about also to give directions to staff.
Right. We met over that. And that's why.
Right. But I just want to make sure, you know, that we're all held to that same standard. So I appreciate that.
Do you believe we're not all held to that same standard?
Yes.
All right, give us an example.
Okay. And what I opted to do at this point is bring that back as a separate agenda item.
Super.
Okay. All right. So
yeah, I would say any of the three of us, if we believe one of us is operating outside the scope of our authority, let's get it on an agenda and talk about it.
Okay.
So this is discussion consideration. As I see it, there's two options in terms of remedy to this. One is that we just call this what it is. We have the conversation. It's available for the public. The other option is we could send a follow-up letter to the city of Ames just expressing kind of what happened in this meeting and our disappointment. My preference, Marty and Laura's, would be that we stop here and we don't go any further, that there be no additional actions taken. It's up to you guys.
It's about you, Laura. What do you think?
I certainly feel that if there was confusion on the city of Ames part about when I was representing myself and when I was representing the county, that maybe, okay, clarify that. Okay, that we need to clarify that for them. I'm looking at my attorney here in the audience. All right, so expressing, I guess you guys, I'm not going to express disappointment in myself because I acted within what I thought I was, I did not think I was supposed to. Okay, so I can't make a motion to say a letter goes to the city of Ames that apologize for something that I didn't know I was doing. I won't do that. But I certainly to clarify, to acknowledge that there was, it appears to be confusion, because that's how it came up, and so that's, Marty, that's what you came to say. All right. So, Marty, would you like to make a motion to send a letter, or would you like to leave it here?
I would be inclined to treat this as you hear me say the term both when we speak and I say it out here as housekeeping.
Okay.
But this is twice we've had this conversation in the sense that it's your first year on an elected board. It's the first time you have had to administer and legislate, and I think that you're learning but this is something that I would think at some point we would have an end point to. I would ask that you make this the end point, in the sense that let us agree that we operate individually on behalf of the county. We have people approach us seeking outcomes. We have to keep cognizant of the fact that we have not the ability to bind the county individually.
I knew that, yep.
We have to be mindful of the language that we use, because we, you know, I would assume that you have the same premises, that you just want to do what is best on behalf of the citizens of this county.
Correct.
And saying things that would put you in legal jeopardy, as Jessica just pointed out, you have to stop yourself, as we're pretty clear on how we do the open meetings, and we're pretty good about locking ourselves back. I would say you have to take that very same approach to that dynamic as we speak to the people, in the smallest of senses and in the grandest of senses. But when you go into a public forum, you have to realize that there are eyes upon you with the expectation that you have the ability to bind. And I would say, as you do it, and you will do it, we will do it, you have to know that that exists, and you have to pump the brakes and stop yourself. So it's a learning experience, but let's say, I would ask for a commitment. It stops here. It doesn't happen again.
I certainly would make a commitment that I would not in any way attempt to bind and deliberately bind in the future. I make a commitment to watch my words, phrasing. Other than that, I would love to be able to say that I won't screw up in the future.
I'm not asking for perfection, Melissa. We seek perfection. We don't offer it. I mean, you know, I don't disregard or discount your enthusiasm on this, on many issues, and this one in particular, but we have to do it in a way that serves. Mm-hmm. AIMS is not as far along as we would like them. We realize that we have a pressing issue that we, as a board, can be effective and cause motion to happen, but we're going to do it on a collaborative basis. And we should engender our words and our actions that we commit to partnerships to get to that outcome. That's it. I would say we leave it here. I agree with Rick. We say that we've had the discussion. We did it in a very robust manner, and let us call it good, and let's just commit. As 17 turns to 18, we never have to come back and do this again.
Okay. All right.
All right. So I'm hearing no motion. Thank you, everybody, for getting us through that. Next, agency reports, RSVP. Kevin, we love it when you come.
All right. I don't know if you got the recorder.
Mm-hmm.
I did. You did?
Look at it.
Okay,
thank you.
No.
Oh, you got a little.
No, I actually was talking about walking around the office.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me. It's always kind of fun to come and share a little bit about what's been going on with RSVP this past year. So this is a copy of our annual report from 16-17. I thought I'd maybe just cover a couple of highlights of that. I think one of the fun highlights is under the annual highlights, the 20-plus celebration. Just this last year, we started looking at and actually recognizing how many of our volunteers have been with us for a long time. And so we kind of decided to make 20 the threshold and make a 20-plus club. And actually, several of them were over 25, 30. We got pins, we had a party. But I think the most remarkable thing, and I think we realized this, but when we started looking at it, our longest tenured continually active volunteer has been with us for 41 years. And she, just to give you some perspective, she registered as an RSVP volunteer when I was in high school. So, anyway, she continues to serve. You know, she is a pen pal with our pen pal program in the schools, and she's 130. And every year we ask her, so Esther, what do you think? You want to be a pen pal again this year? And she said, yeah, well, I'll be optimistic if you will. So she continues to serve. So we just found that to be remarkable. And I think that speaks to the importance of people having an opportunity to stay active and involved in their community. And she's certainly no exception. And on the inside, we've kind of broke it down this year. Under the very top part are really our signature programs, and those are the programs that we are either exclusively facilitating or our involvement in facilitating those projects is obviously an important part of making sure that they keep running. So we have it broken down by educational, healthy futures, our volunteer management for emergency services, and then down below are more what we call capacity building assignments that are those assignments we recruit volunteers for in place with other organizations or agencies. And the only thing I want to touch on too specifically was I wanted to thank you again for the additional support that you provided this past year for our transportation program. Since July, we've been averaging about 5 to 6 trips a month to Des Moines, which is really kind of what our focus was, to get people to those appointments in Des Moines that they really needed to get to, either to see a specialist. We're finding that probably between half and two-thirds of those trips are to the VA medical center for our clients who really need to get down there to get the services that they need. So that is kind of a little bit of an update on that, so we appreciate your support with that, and obviously with just your support in general for all of our programming. So I guess I would open it up to questions.
Well, we're so appreciative of everything RSVP brings to our community. It seems like any time there's a hole, you guys are working to find a way to fill that hole. It's a positive on so many levels. It's not only a positive for the work that you guys do and the service you provide, but it's a positive to your volunteers as well to continue to stay active, and we're so appreciative.
Well, thank you very much.
So, questions?
No, I had the opportunity on behalf of the board, as we do, to attend the Veterans Day at the Moose Lodge, and one of the highlights that was mentioned, I was in both, was publicly stated in a private conversation, was the fact that you do, through your volunteers, move these veterans around when they don't have circumstances in their own home. And that was seen as a very big plus and a very big resource. So kudos to you on behalf of that organization and those people in our county.
We just actually, in the last few months, started serving our first homeless veteran, getting him to appointments. We're working with Brett McLean at the VA and with the ERP, and he's been able to get several appointments that were really critical for him, and so that's been kind of a neat thing to be able to help with. So, anyway, thank you very
thank
much.
You. Thank have you. Have a great day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, too.
Next, the consideration of personnel actions. We've got the action forms as listed with the minutes. Yeah, minutes from November 28th. Thanks, Shell.
I would move as presented.
Second.
All those in favor are Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Now personnel actions. And note the one change I mentioned at the beginning, where instead of $15 an hour, it's really $15.44 an hour.
I would move with the change noted.
I would second that.
Motion and a second. Olson.
Aye.
Chi.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda. Board, let's pull number two, which is the abatement of delinquent mental health taxes, because I think we owe it to the public as a long part of a long conversation to talk about this one. And, Loris, I understand you want to pull number five?
Correct.
Is there anything else that we need to pull?
None.
All right. So I take a motion to consent agenda with the noted changes.
Let's go. Okay.
Motion and second. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Number two is consideration of resolution 1867 for the abatement of delinquent motorhome taxes per section 555C.2. Renee, thank you for coming up. I called Renee and let her know that we needed to talk about this, not because it's anything out of the ordinary, but because it involves Crestview. And fortunately, we're getting near the end of this, but
good morning.
For the record, Renee Tweet, Troy County Treasurer. I delegated most of this to Rhonda, who will speak more on it, but I had asked her to wait. Grant has been working on these throughout the year, and I wanted to kind of lump them together to give you, the board, and the public an idea of how much is going to be abated. As far as I know, there's nothing he's done wrong in this regard.
Yeah, so, let's just be clear, because I really wanted to be clear. This is pretty standard practice for us as one gets demolished, that we abate the taxes, as long as the owner of the motorhome or mobile home follows the process that's laid out in code. This is a big number. I mean, it's the biggest number that we've ever abated in one fell swoop, I think, on mobile homes. But if he's done everything that he's supposed to do, it looks to me to be very pretty clear-cut. Ronnie, can you weigh in?
The only thing I would add to that is back in July when he had his attorney representing him, they had actually presented a document that had, I believe, 22 mobile homes on it that he had previously filed FEDs on for forced entry detainers. That is a court process, and once that's done, then they do qualify for the removal of a valueless mobile home, which is what we have on the agenda today. There are only 12 of these on here, and again, he had already gone through the court process and has document numbers for all 22, but he's only come forth with the 12 that I have.
So we're expecting 10 more, is that what
correct.
You're telling me?
And that's where she was coming from with kind of waiting. We had hoped to have at least all 22 on there. We're still waiting for 10 of them, and I apologize, I do not have a dollar figure for those.
Well, and not only that, I think it's completely appropriate that we make sure from a transparency point of view that the people of Story County know what this is costing, not only the dollars that the county put in to help move the residents there, but now also in abating these taxes, that I'm sure we will do as the code lays out. But I felt it was important that we spend a couple minutes talking about this and acknowledging that it was on the agenda. Laura, Smarty, anything?
We will have a Board of Health meeting here this afternoon, and Press News, as always, will be on it. But I would take a more of a topical view for the fact that, Renee, I appreciate what your office has done in the process of, as we found the year with this facility operating in a way that was could have been done better, and now that the owner has chosen to take it to closure, it was great, but in no small part of it goes to the credit of your department, and in particular, you know, Rhonda and what she did, because to see her put on these, what I would call chore boots, and go trailer to trailer in places I wasn't inclined to go to seek out information on these things, it was just, it would leave mental pictures, and I would smile as I tell you this story, but we are, the board took it upon ourselves, this is closing out a sad chapter in Story County, and we are doing a good thing. Unfortunately, we're in a position where, yes, we have to abate this much taxes, but I think the end justifies what we're sitting here to do. But I will speak more about it here this afternoon in here, but I just wanted the public to know that your department really went above and beyond, because we would not be at this point talking about what we are here in the Board of Health meeting this afternoon if you would not have the help provided.
I completely agree.
I do have a question backing up here in that these are at least the ones at the top, the ones identified as Crestview, that they've not been able to legally change title to somebody else. Is that what it is? And so it's, no.
Well, the actual code,
yeah.
The option is either to junk it,
uh-huh.
or if there is a willing buyer to come take it and remove it off the
property. Okay, so
the bottom three were three willing buyers.
Okay.
The rest of which
but
he had
the so these are taxes that Brent owed. They're part of the $71,000? Is that what it was? At one point, Renee had come forward and said something. So we're taking out $23,000 of the $71,000 because he doesn't owe them. I mean, did he still legally owe it? We're just going to say you don't have to pay it?
He seems, nine of them are in his personal, in Crestview's name.
Okay, right.
But they're deemed valueless.
Okay, thank you. All right, okay.
Then my only concern is how is he going to remove these from his property, and hopefully that will be discussed this afternoon.
All right, thank you. So
he happy to come to Board of Health.
Yeah, the DNR is, I think I sent this to you guys just as a pass-through here
right.
earlier
I
in the week that in conversations with the DNR, they're going to be allowing some on-site demolition as long as the friable asbestos is contained.
Right.
So you're seeing progress. I talked to Matt Corey yesterday, and you're seeing a slight decrease in the numbers that are there. But I think because there's a dollar value attached to the demolition, there's a process to both the county and the DNR, it is not going as quickly as we suspected it might. But there are progress is being made.
Baby steps.
Baby steps. Very good. Very good.
Okay, thank you. That cleared up exactly where the responsibility is.
All right, thank you.
I would make a motion that we accept the treasurer's recommendation and abate the $23,000 and change in the taxes as presented here.
Motion to adopt resolution 1857.
Adopt resolution 1857.
I would second that.
Further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Cheney?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Thank you, guys. Good job, Ron.
Thank you.
Next is consideration of appointment of Ron Smith as a Story County non-public official representative on the Aging Resources of Central Iowa Board for a two-year term. This has been a gap that we've had for a while. I think we went and found a lady named Nancy Broussard who filled the previous term, and then we have really struggled to find anybody with interest in serving there. Ron Smith has been a great volunteer on the Asset Board, and so when he indicated interest, for me, it seemed like a no-brainer. Go ahead, Deb.
Right. Deb Schildroth, Director of External Operations and County Services. And we, with Aging Resources of Central Iowa, we are responsible for appointing a Board of Supervisors member to the Board of Directors. This particular appointment, which is a non-public official appointment, and then two individuals to the advisory committee that Central Iowa Aging Resources has. So a lot of representation coming from Story County and the other counties involved to this particular agency. It was in mid-October that the Executive Director of Aging Resources reached out, talked to Marty about this gap and needing to fill this as soon as possible. So with a sense of urgency, I had contacted Ron Smith because as he departed from Asset, he indicated to me, if you think I can fill in or would be a good representative for other boards or commissions, please let me know and I'll do what it takes then to make necessary applications. So I had contacted him. He filled out a new application. I had shared that with all of you prior to this meeting. Talked with Marty about it, and went ahead then and put this on the agenda for consideration.
So my first question is with a sense of urgency. If we do not appoint Mr. Smith today and instead decide to go through our usual process of advertising that there is a opportunity for one of our Story County citizens to serve on this board, what is there a problem from Aging Resources standpoint? Do they absolutely have to have this filled by December 31st of this year?
That was my sense from the communication from the Executive Director at Aging Resources. We went about a little over a year without an appointment.
Joel reached out, and I think it was an oversight, not necessarily identified right away, and as they want to educate people that sit on the board, he thought sooner rather than later is the communication I got.
We've not had anybody apply to sit on that board in at least 10 years.
Have we announced that it's available for people to apply?
It's not
on our list of boards and commissions, is it? If you go to our Facebook page, our website page,
it was not included on that list. I was because of the other appointments, I thought we were already covered. Mm-hmm. But we were covered with our advisory committee. This appointment was brought to my attention when Marty talked to me about it, so it had not been originally included in that list.
Do they appoint all of the representatives for all of the counties at the same time? So, because I'm at the training issue now, because I hear that they would like to train someone at the same time. Okay, so then that's why I'm asking about if they appoint all of them or if they have the counties to appoint for the same periods all the time.
I think it's a rolling schedule. I think as appointments lay open or as the counties. I'm not sure. I can't speak for anybody else other than Story County, other than the fact that we had a long existing gap. They would like to see it build as the new year takes shape, in the sense that it's just like, okay, bring somebody. You have somebody that would be inclined to serve in this capacity. And I think I clearly remember the meeting when Ron, we awarded him for the fact that he was time and term limited on Asset, or he'd still be on that board. And it was just like I forwarded the response from Joel to Deb, and it's just like, well, knowing that they would like to get this done, does anybody come to mind to you that we would have indeed known to us?
I was thrilled when Deb came. When Deb came forward and said that Ron was interested, I was thrilled. He'd be a great representative. It's a hole we need to get filled.
This is not about Mr. Smith. I mean,
I don't take it as not Mr. Smith.
Okay. This is about process, what we do to go ahead and make our citizens aware of their opportunities to serve on boards and commissions. This is about we have not made that announcement to other people, and right now I'm hearing that it's because it's in a sense of urgency. So we didn't have somebody sitting for a year, and that's unfortunate, okay, for that we didn't have a public person sitting for a year on the board. But is that enough reason? Is this role within Aging Resources so necessary that we want to circumvent our process? And then the next thing has to do with, making the decision even, between the two of you that for the selection of the person. So I like to be fair here. So I'm asking, do we have a true emergency here? Do we have is there a true sense of urgency that will greatly handicap the county or greatly handicap Aging Resources if we take the time instead to go through the process of seeking someone? And then if training is the big issue, do we go ahead and appoint then headed into 2019 for a two-year term? Because they're staggered terms, correct? If I figure this out.
I am not trying to get pulled down into the process as much to affect the outcome. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I don't think, if we were going to put this on your website, all you're going to do is say it's going to lay there for a period of time. We have openings right now. I understand you're speaking to an altruistic approach, but I suspect, sure, we can say no, we'll get to it, we got a process to work itself out, and quite likely we will turn ourselves into the point where Ron did. And then we did not move on it when we could. I guess I understand completely on the cerebral side of it, but it's just like I don't see where we are. Once again, look at the people that will watch our meetings. We sit there and we say we want to take ourselves out to the public. We have a hit counter on these meetings. They're almost consistently modest.
25.
Yes. I don't want to get so far off topic, but the thing is, I think it was brought to me, it was expressed, the fact that this existed. Could you find somebody, sooner rather than later? And if you have somebody, could you please bring them back to us?
But let's address the process thing. So our process for our boards and commissions is one thing. We advertise, we go through the process. I mean, it's changed a couple of times in 2017 what the process is. This is not one of our boards and commissions. This is Aging Resources saying, we need a representative from Story County. Do you have anybody good? We have never been able to find a multitude of people who were interested. The last person we had represent us was because I went and had a personal conversation with her and asked. And before that, we had had 2 years where we didn't have anybody represent us. And before that, I think it was a conversation between Jane Halliburton and whoever had represented us to get this one done. This is different than appointing for Planning and Zoning Commission or appointing to Board of Health or appointing to any of those. This is one of our Central Iowa agencies has made a request. Do you have somebody that would do a great job in this? Ron Smith has expressed, I think it's fair to say, enthusiasm about representing us on that or representing the people of Story County on that. And I think it's a no-brainer appointment, and I don't believe it messes with our process one iota.
Would it, since they stagger appointments, would it be possible for us to appoint Mr. Smith for 1 year and then give other citizens the opportunity starting in 2019, including Mr. Smith, to go ahead and indicate an interest to continue to serve?
that would, to me, seem to be fair to open up in the future for other citizens who might not be aware and yet have an interest, and yet we feel the immediate need.
I would be more inclined to defer to the organization we participate in. If they have a process, if they have a desire to see spots filled, to, you know, you're imbued with, you know, institutional knowledge the longer that you serve in a process. I mean, this is not a Story County entity.
Right, and that's, I'm taking that into account.
In that deference, I'm not trying to impose a Story County outcome other than the fact that we were asked for a Story County person.
Teaching resource, it's a 2-year term. Mm-hmm. That's how they defined it, and then they can, the individual can bring up, I think, fully up to three times. Mm-hmm. After that first term. And they are requiring either a resolution or copies of the board meeting minutes that solidify this appointment. So those are the two things that have been communicated back to me as to what they are saying.
Right. Yeah, thank you. Good job. Do we have a motion?
You pulled it.
Okay. I would not make the motion. I would second the motion. If Marty made it, the reason I won't make the motion is because I'm going to stand on principle here. But I would second it so that we could take it to a vote.
I would move the appointment of Ron Smith as our Story County non-public official representative of the Aging Resources and Central Iowa Board for a 2-year term ending 12/31/19.
I would second it.
Further discussion? Cheney.
Aye.
Olson.
No.
Sanders. Aye. Ron Smith is our appointee. Thank you, Deb. No public hearing items today, so we're down to additional items. And we've got two coming from Leanne Harder. And I think since we have a student with us for the second one, we'll go ahead and get the second item done first. Is that right, Leanne? Okay, so we're going to shift the two, item one and item two. We're going to do home-based Iowa first so that our student can get back where our student is supposed to be.
Good morning, Harders.
I'm Leanne Harder, County Outreach and Special Projects Manager, and with me I have one of the two scale students that were chose to work in the home-based Iowa project. It is Amanda Harder, and there is a commonality in the last name. I'll put out there she is my daughter, a senior at Nevada High School. She and Grant Van Zee from Ballard are the two scale students, and Grant cannot be here because of a class commitment. Scale is Story County Active Learning Environment. It is a program through all the school districts and DMAC, a partnership that has a wonderful opportunity for students to get hands-on experience with local businesses. The presentation I'm going to give, Amanda can jump in if she sees fit. She and Grant put this together. And then in addition to this, there's a report that has a series of findings that the students prepared they went through all, 77 home-based Iowa businesses or communities throughout the state of Iowa, and kind of tried to summarize what the communities that had incentives that stood out to them to help us as a county look at our current incentive package and see what modifications, if necessary, would be necessitated or an opportunity to make change now. I'm going to start the stage by saying we unfortunately have not had anyone take advantage of our current incentive package, and that is the reason when Scale came to Story County and said, hey, do you have any projects? This really kind of jumped up to me. Brenda Dreyer and I have had the opportunity to go down and meet. We attended the summit in Des Moines in October for Home-Based Iowa. Supervisor Chitty took time and met with the Scale students and myself, talked about a current program. This all set the basis then for Grant and Amanda to go forward and do the research for their presentation. So there, I'm going to do just a review of our potential. What the report showed was a review of the incentive packages the various communities had. Generally, they have community tours. They have welcome baskets. They have relocation assistance packages, which we have. They offer hotel stays, incentives from lending institutions. That's what that report delves into. It gives you an overview of those various communities. In the welcome package, right now we don't do this, but in speaking with Brenda Dreyer from Ames Economic Development, we could then, not we, but we, Story County, we in general, as Story County, could offer each veteran visiting Story County a complimentary welcome basket that includes $50 in dining dollars for you to use, you know, the veteran, this is how we market it, during your visit to Story County. And partner with that is VIP tours and coordination meetings. I mean, they don't necessarily know where Nevada is located in relationship to Story City. Having someone there in the communities that can take you from place to place as a veteran and his or her family wanting to know what Story County is all about. These would be items that would come from AEDC's end. This would not be Story County government offering this end, but it's still part of the overall incentive package that we would market then as a home-based Iowa program. The next would be looking at our housing incentive program. Currently, we have the Welcome Home to Story County, Iowa Relocation Assistance Program. We do have proposed modifications. I'm going to talk to you right now about the current, or I'm going to come back to that, though. Other jurisdictions have bank incentives. This is definitely beyond the scope of Story County government, but perhaps sometime down the future, we could reach out to local lending institutions, see if they would be willing to offer these types of incentives. Some of the examples they do, they waive the origination fee. They have monies off $500 in most examples of closing costs. Put mortgage and $50. If you get a mortgage, you get $50 in any new checking and savings account. $5,000 grants available. Again, these are lending institutions incentive packages. So again, I want to get a whole picture of what the students found with the incentives out there. So going back to our Welcome Home to Story County, Iowa, we have existing restrictions in place. One, you have to be relocating to Story County and establish Story County as your primary residence. The real estate that, if you do purchase real estate, it cannot be inside the city limits of Ames. You have to be employed in a full-time position within Story County, and that job must meet the middle or higher skill job level. When home-based Iowa was established, this was kind of particular that it had in the overall incentive package. That's since been dropped, but we carried it forth, and I'll talk about that in a possible change. Be an employee of a Story County home-based Iowa business, apply within 24 months of military discharge, and then finance through Story County Bank. So the students looked at this and have some proposed modifications that we then internalized and started digesting. We do want them to relocate to Story County and choose Story County as their primary residence. The exclusion of properties within the city limits of Ames, we kind of put that in play to begin with, thinking it would help provide housing incentives to the smaller communities. As I said, we started with having no one take advantage of this program, which is up to $2,500 for relocation. I think we could possibly drop it at this point, that restriction. The third and fourth are really where they're employed. They have to be with a home-based Iowa business, or they must meet that middle or higher skill at job level. We've had some inquiries of veterans who are leaving active service and returning to Iowa State or even DMAC. This excludes them. They are not going to be employed in a home-based Iowa business. I guess if they're a TA at Iowa State, they technically would be, but they just simply want to further their education. We would not be able to have them take advantage of this program. We also kind of are really limiting with that 24 months of military discharge. There's a lot of things that happen after you discharge active duty that maybe that two-year time frame is too restrictive. Maybe it's finding where the right town is, right school district. Maybe as a veteran that, for whatever reason, the spouse is coming later. So that 24 months would be pretty limiting. And then lastly, there's a proposed recommended modification to remove the real estate financing through Story County Bank, where it's very laudable. Right now, majority of people really the local lending institutions isn't necessarily where you do your banking, especially online. And a lot of these veterans may have been overseas, so they've done that online banking, online lending, and they have that type of mentality that online is the way to go. So with that, the Welcome Home to Story County Relocation Assistance Program that is actually before you for consideration today would include the externalities like AEDC doing a welcome basket, but internally kind of revisiting our program, having the eligibility be you're relocating to Story County and making it your primary residence. If you're purchasing a home, that real estate has to be located in Story County. You have to be discharged under honorable conditions, and then you have to apply to the program. We have an application, so you see how that gets much more simple in the scope and approach. Then there's some other incentives that the students found. These, again, are those external programs. Scholastic Passes, I think, is wonderful, and that's definitely something my other hat I'll be bringing forward to the Nevada School District. I think if there's something the school districts can be doing for the veterans and their families, and then reaching out to others. Again, these would not be ones that Story County government per se can affect, but by suggesting, but we cannot really make a big change. So the next steps are you discuss proposed modifications. We would, if they're approved, put them on the website, do some flourishing of the applications and make them kind of more user-friendly. The Homebase Iowa State's webpage is actually anxiously waiting for us to get modifications done so that they can make, one, feature us in the next newsletter, and two, make our modifications on our website of theirs. They have each community by the state lists out each community and all the incentive packages. Again, I said updating the application forms, distributing the outreach packages. And what Brenda and I are doing, every time a veteran signs up for Homebase Iowa, she's keeping a spreadsheet, and once a week, she immediately sends out an email, and then once a week, we each send out a handwritten letter to that individual saying, welcome to Story County, Iowa. We're pleased to hear your thing about Story County. I include Veterans Affairs information, but I'll then also include our relocation package information. I've been holding on to those for a couple weeks to get the newest information out, see if we can encourage people to take advantage of our programs. And then in early 2018, there's a whole other arm of it, which is the business partners. Those Homebase Iowa communities have an invitation to them. This would be really Brenda's baby to manage, but be involved in a little bit, but have them kind of get a dual-pronged approach because they're getting the resumes as well from these veterans. With that, I do want to thank Grant and Amanda. Actually, the research, I know, I saw firsthand how painful it was to actually go to every community's website package and look it over. And there were some that they just said it wasn't even worth communicating to us, and I appreciate that as well. Do you have anything you want to add?
It's a great job. Thank you so much for putting all this together. I really appreciate being able to look at what other communities are doing and how we compare to the reality that we have not yet had anybody utilize the offer that we have in Homebase Iowa. I only have one issue for me that I want to talk about, and that is going ahead and applying the possible grant to those who decide they want to live within Ames. So I remember the initial conversation when we went through this, and one of our goals was, you know, you try to incentivize things that are a desired but less frequently chosen outcome. And the reality is when somebody comes to Story County, you look at the population base, they tend to reside in Ames on average. And we want to incentivize those who would be willing to live outside of Ames. The second part to that is, for me, Ames is the 600-pound gorilla in the room as far as us locally, and I would be completely for Ames choosing to incentivize whatever they want to do, incentivize as part of Homebase Iowa, but I'm having trouble with the notion of the county incentivizing somebody to live in Ames, when the reality is we don't have a lack of residents in Ames. We have a lack of residents in some of our other small towns, and I'm much more comfortable incentivizing some of those. Outside of that, everything else to me looks phenomenal, and I'm so appreciative that you brought it to us. And, Lawrence Marty, I'm anxious to get your point of view on whether we include or exclude Ames, living within the city of Ames, as part of our incentive package.
Well, in sitting down with the students and Leanne, we were trying to think like we were really trying to move to the home base Iowa Story County 2.0. Mm-hmm. And we know we had a modest uptake as far as use. And we were thinking, like, what could we do to broaden, make it more of a holistic approach to take into account? And I guess the fact that to be exclusive, you know, I said there's a beta guy, so
right.
I hope that has some weight on this one, that I would not necessarily be inclined in the conversation that we had had was that we were trying to attract workforce. And I don't think that I have any discomfort in saying if they choose to reside in Ames, they choose to reside in Ames. If we can get them, we get them. And that would be the totality, I think, the thought. I mean, Amanda, you were there, and I don't know if you care to speak to it, but that was my takeaway for the fact we just would like to see these veterans come to us to work in our county. And if the circumstances are such that Ames is their choice, their community of choice, so be it.
I understand where you're coming from, as we discuss later, kind of things, too, about when we say, hey, we want someone to live, you know, in one of our smaller communities. But immediately I think about, I like, by the way, Amanda, and what you and Grant have done is pointing out, hey, we're excluding people who are working on a degree. Okay, and we're getting rid of the requirement about middle and higher skilled job levels, because not all veterans, I mean, there are some highly, highly skilled people when it comes to auto mechanics that come, they learn the trade, okay, in the services. Now back to living, okay. But from a financial standpoint, they may not have, other than the auto mechanic, reliable transportation. And, okay, so as a result, they actually, if they're in school, may find that economically it ends up being the most practical thing for them to do to pay a higher rent in Ames as opposed to, you know, or and still take advantage of some of these or buy one of the very few small houses at a reasonable price left at Ames. Okay. So that's why I see that just excluding them might be counterproductive, at least to the people who are in the two categories I listed before. Is it possible, I'm just looking at the $2,500 that we offer in a variety. By adding some of the incentives suggested in the next slide that you guys came up with, and maybe possibly even since we do like moving expenses and utility deposits anyway, that we would be hitting some people in Ames like that, Rick. Okay, you know, so with the $2,500, who might not even be buying a home?
If you're suggesting that by including Ames, we are absolutely going to spend some money on this, then I would agree with that completely. I believe that there are people who would be part of Home Base Iowa that right now we're not offering the $2,500 to them because they choose to live in Ames. And if we open that up, I think there's people today, I don't know how many additional we're drawing, but I think there's people today that would want to take advantage of this. But I've never viewed this as just a feel-good, spend-some-money kind of program. I viewed this as a program that we were trying to utilize to not only help our veterans, but also improve Story County. I remember the conversation vividly, Leanne, you were right in that chair, and we talked about, boy, what a great impact three honorably discharged veterans could have in a town like Colo or Rolla. We don't have the same impact by sheer numbers in Ames. And again, I go back to everything that we've done programmatically, I believe, has gone on the assumption that Ames is a little different. We're there to support Ames, but we're not there to supplement Ames. We do, in fact, at different levels, right? Then we have that second tier of Story City, Huxley, and Nevada, that sometimes we supplement, sometimes we assist, sometimes they're part of the full. And then we have a whole group of other municipalities, smallest municipalities and the rural areas, where the Board of Supervisors at this point has said, you know what, we need to be the ones stepping out front. This home-based Iowa program, when it was created, wasn't any different. And so I'm in complete agreement. If we think it would make us feel better to have some participants in our home-based Iowa program, easily we get that by removing Ames from the We Will Not Fund list. But I don't think that's what our goal is. I think our goal is to try to assist the veterans coming, but also have a positive impact to the smaller towns in Story County.
I would remove the feel component to what you just said, because I have no feelings vested here. I just take for the fact that this is a revisit to a program you, Wayne, and Paul brought out of the ground. I just have to go on the history of its use. And at that point, we looked at it from just that. We took those two factoids. Then we applied what we thought in the intervening time. What could we do to see additional use? I would not be inclined to say anybody that's here qualifies. I say anybody that comes here could qualify. Mm-hmm. So I take away the fact nobody exists with us today. No. That's not a qualification. No. You came here of your own volition. Mm-hmm. But if you're attracting somebody outside of Story County that would meet this criteria, then I would see that as a qualified win.
And the purpose of the program, while I know using it in the smaller towns as a economic development tool. I hate to think of bodies as people as that coldly, but at least, saying to contribute there. But there's the component that these are veterans who have served. And so is not the goal of the program also to encourage veterans, to reward them if they'll come live here? And so from that standpoint, Do we want to exclude veterans who opt, for the reasons we've kind of discussed, or others, to come to? They've chosen to be here, but they need to live in Ames, or they want to, And then, so I think I'm on. I'm with the recommendations of the search committee, the scale committee on this one.
Absolutely. So, how much money do we have budgeted for the incentive program?
$10,000.
So four individuals could take advantage.
If they took the full $2,500.
Okay, so I'm going to want, assuming we go forward, as I'm hearing my two counterparts here, I'm just going to want to track closely where those incentives are utilized.
Yes,
and then we're going to have a conversation.
I would say I would like the timeline that we place before us to not go a multiple of years, that we do. We bring this back on revisit at maybe year's end.
Okay.
Yeah, well, let's go see what 18 brings us. And if we get full use and maybe it's weighted more towards the Ames area, then I would be more than willing to say maybe we should step away from that. But I'm just looking for somebody to use this.
I'm comfortable with where you guys want to go. That was my concern. When are you guys willing to make a motion?
It's your program.
Fine. So this is...
Item two, additional items.
I would move consideration of modifications as listed to the home-based Iowa incentive package.
I would second.
Motion and a second. Amanda, great job. Please pass on to Grant. Great job. Thank you so much. Further discussion?
None.
Sheedy?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Home-based Iowa modifications pass. Yeah. Have a great day at school. Do you got your homework done? All right, now we're moving up to item one under additional items, discussion consideration of proposed modifications to the economic development policies. This is an exercise we go through every year, and I think we've had changes every single year, if I'm not mistaken. Leanne, take us through where we are this year.
And thank you again for letting that swap to occur. Amanda actually has to get to scale over at REG right now. What the board has before you, if you'd like me, I can try and pull it up as well as part of the agenda center. But our proposed red lines and strikeouts that reflect changes to the economic development process and policies. As Supervisor Sanders said, this is something we try to do annually, if not annually, probably every other year.
it has become more annually for us. We go forward and find the cost itself needs a little bit tweaking from time to time. I'll just start at the very beginning. Obviously, the first paragraph is the date. So the third paragraph, adding a statement, funds may or may not be available in any given year. I'm going to actually try and pull it up here so that the public can see what we're looking at. Continuing then, under the section titled TIF, Implement Financing, TIF, Goals, Objectives, and Strategies, it talks about TIF and references TIF over and over. How we operationalize it and then implement it is calling the Urban Renewal Area Program. And the policies really don't say that. And I know I've been talking about the Urban Renewal Area Program, or URA, like a lot of people call it. And then someone says, well, about the TIF program. And this is just simplifying it so people know it's the one I'm saying. So that's clear. Under Section 2, which talks about school funding recognition, it really just semantics, kind of rephrasing how it's worded. And you'll see throughout there, like under the eligibility section, adding references to the Urban Renewal Area Program. The next page, I'm trying to pull the agenda up at the same time. The next page, under the Economic Development Project Process, just really solidifying the process we've been following, making sure that step one is clear, that the pre-application conference is mandatory in order to be eligible for the funding.
Yeah, you want to strike or encourage.
Or encourage,
right? Yeah, I had that marked too.
Oh, yeah. That's supposed to be sorry. Then adding step three, which is really how we've been doing it, but really making it sure it's legit in the process, making sure it's consistent with what the Iowa code requires as well. And then that's really the changes on that section, and then addition of TIF properties, referencing amendments to Chapter 8, which is the chapter in the code of ordinances that we have to amend each time we add properties to the our TIF. And then really adding language that is talked about utility structures under facilities. Let's say what we mean, including both CUX or commercial wind energy conversion systems and the commercial solar energy systems. So that those are clarified. In addition, obviously, we have better equipment as one of our properties.
If we could go back up to page two, and just the paragraph right above step five, consultation meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first line of that, we also have the first line says potential projects will affect taxing. So I don't know. I think we've got a verb that we need to edit there.
What was that again?
It's the paragraph right above step five in the first line toward the right side will affect it. It's just, yeah.
I did send this to, I failed to mention, I did send this to Ethan Anderson, County Attorney's Office,
mm-hmm.
And a couple of these are mine, trying to take Ethan's comments and filter them back into mm-hmm. the red lines and strikeouts, so thank you for catching that. I do have it on the screen now.
Okay.
Not as fast to multitask as I used to be. Just having him stick around to do that for me. So, in essence, that's the summary of the proposed changes. They would go into effect beginning of January 1, 2018. They would govern the process for next year. I'll be glad to answer any other questions.
Let's see, the one real substantive change is the requirement that any applicant must attend the consultation meeting. Other than that, I didn't notice any substantive changes to our current practice.
Right.
Date changes, and Laura's caught the grammatical things that we needed to correct, but they didn't change. They didn't impact the meaning of what we have here, so we should be good there. Any other questions? Anything else you guys want to discuss further before we act on this?
I,
Okay, I made some lists, kind of just notes of things that have come up at the board table so far regarding, you know, TIF and the funding or whatever. And I wasn't sure if this was even a document where we would put them or if this would be related to the applications. But one thing that we had I know, just skimmed over was limiting the number of grants for any one purpose or project. In other words, like the Slater project that went on for several years. We did street by street by street, or multiple grants for the same park up in Story City. Is that something we want to actually put in as a, I don't know, it's almost a restriction, but, and would it go in a document like this?
It could. I mean, it could go in a document like this. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that that's something I would favor, because I think we always, the three of us, always maintain the ability to say yes or no to a project based on any number of factors.
Right? Okay. Yeah.
But it could go in a document like this if we wanted to codify something like that. But I would view that as reducing our flexibility rather than clarifying for a potential action
okay.
and what works.
Okay. Another one, and this just came up, a week or two ago. I want to address it differently. We discussed about time limits for putting the funds to use, going back to, if you remember, we had discussed that one. And once again, would this be the appropriate document to put in if we want to set some time frames for use of money?
Well, so I think we started to set the time frame in our agreement when money is awarded rather than putting it into this.
Right.
Is that right, Leanne?
Yeah. This last round, we did start doing that as part of the implementation of the process.
Okay. This came up when I went up to Story City for the tree lighting. Yeah. Somebody's laughing there. Okay. Anyway, there was an article in the Ames Tribune, and it talked about how we paid for the money for the lights, and that the lights were going to get turned on that night. And so I went. Marty wasn't available to go. Slapped on the old Board of Supervisors pin and went up just because it sounded like there was going to be some kind of ceremony around this, right? And got up there, and there wasn't. The lights weren't even there. So, which is okay, because it was great chili and soup, and the tree lighting was fun, and the carols and whatever. But it kind of brought up the thing that the article in the paper was pretty clear that this had happened. It emphasized that the supervisors had paid money. You know, I mean, it wasn't for this, and then the community had raised the rest of the money. And so just do we need to put something in about that the recipient is responsible for assuring that there's accurate media out there? It's not so they had a delay in the lights. It happens, right? We've had projects that go on to delay forever. But I don't think we've had an instance so far where literally we've had a media situation where there really was not representation. There was not accurate representation. I did, Abby Huff sent me an email on that Saturday morning and said, thanks for coming, and actually when we really get the lights, we'll have a formal presentation. You all three did it. But if you were gone, we weren't sure if we'd been invited or not, which is why I went. I mean, it was kind of more like, geez, did we get an invite? And we didn't know. So, but I did ask her, I said, and normally this would be strictly the Greater Chamber Connection and Story City's issue, whether they wanted to follow up with the city, but since it was listed, I mean, you know, it was a big deal was made about our funding, I said, I just kind of want to make sure that it doesn't look like we're sitting back here and not knowing what's going on, you know, with the money. So anyway, do we want to do that, or do we want to just, it's going to be so rare that we don't need to address it?
Well, I'd say two things. One, it's going to be rare, and two, who are you making responsible for accuracy in the media, and how far does that go?
Well, actually, no, I'm not even responsible for accuracy in the media. I was just more, I'd asked her if she followed up and asked for clarification and hadn't heard. So, yeah. Okay. All right. Maybe I just...
She did leave you with the assurance that when it actually was installed, that we'd be noticed.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I didn't go up there to be noticed. It was more like I was concerned we weren't being represented.
You just took it because you read an article. I get that.
Right.
And we talked about it, and it was fine. You went up there, and you represented us, and that's what we do.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the lights, which would be a little surprising, but it it happens. So.
Okay. All right. Yes, we will be noticed when it's actually done. Okay. So, okay.
That was my
all
question.
Right. Okay. So those were my notes about if we wanted to bring in and where would we want to put them in.
I feel like they've been answered?
I haven't.
My only issue would be on number two on our school funding recognition. We had a conversation with an elected official, AVDO, yesterday, and the state is still a little bit tenuous on where they are on a funding basis. And we might have some.
That's why we have that recognition.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. I can't say that we give ourselves an out there because the thing is we would not be giving anything on a provision basis that would harm the districts.
And what Marty's talking about is currently the state backfills our school systems for dollars that go into the TIF process. So they're in essence held harmless. There are discussions every year that to this point have not really risen to the surface at the state of whether they're going to continue that backfill. We note here that if there comes a day that the state is not holding our schools basically harmless, it will be much tougher for any county to utilize a TIF process, any county or city.
Right.
Yeah, if that's getting done, and we just recognize that there. Okay. Anything further, or I take a motion?
I do have one more question, just based upon, would the project improvements at Fernald qualify under our transportation infrastructure improvements and the utility infrastructure expansion, or does it have to be an incorporated area?
It does not have to be an incorporated area, and I can't answer the question on whether Fernald would qualify. They qualify to submit an application. Is that fair?
Not sure who would submit the application.
It would probably be our planning and development department that would submit the application on their behalf.
In that case, we're going to have some really muddy waters because there are drainage assessments out there as well.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting it would be easy to do. The question was, do they qualify to apply? And I think very clearly they qualify to apply. Now, whether the project is fundable or whether there would be issues with the application, as we've seen other times,
they could
apply.
All right, thank you.
Anything else?
I'm good.
All right, then take a motion.
Move consideration of the modifications to the economic development plan as proposed. Thank you, Leanne, what you did to get it to this point.
Mm-hmm. I'll second, including the thank you, Leanne, for what you did to get it to this point.
Absolutely. Further discussion?
None.
Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Thanks, Leanne. Good job. Hope you're feeling better. All right, we noted early that we aren't doing anything with three because Story Medical found an alternative route, is my understanding. So now we're to discussion and consideration of conducting a housing needs assessment study. Loris?
Okay, we'll stay and Brenda come on. Oh, it'll be Deb and Lee and I kind of talk. Well, definitely Lee in, if you could stay to answer questions. Okay. So, as the memo says, kind of the background of what I did to get some proposed information, recommendations from City of Ames employee who knew a lot about studies, and from Brenda Dreyer, who left the county where they had just done needs a study. And first of all, is to ask, to make sure that we've affirmed our intention that we were interested back in July. Are we still interested? And as we see, the city is not going to be participating. Based upon comments from the staff and at that meeting that night, that indicated they would be more than willing to share their information with us and that they will be, in fact, going through the same type of research and data during the same time period as if we used a consultant, or we would be doing this this housing needs assessment, that they would be able to probably by the end of the year integrate their information into it. So the discussion that Deb and Leanne and I had when we talked about now what would this proposal of how this we would move forward look like to bring to the board, thought maybe using an estimated amount of $50,000 instead of the estimated we've gone with $70,000. We don't have any idea what the value of the work of the same staff would be related to changing conditions from 1998, because so much of this information is now online. Okay, and even since we've written this memo, We found out at the Story County Housing Trust fund discussion last week. Was it just last week, Brenda? Thanks. Okay. That the state of Iowa, the Iowa Finance Agency, is also has contracted with a consultant to do a by-county market data type of information, financial data. So they'll be gathering for everything, for every county, and reporting on statistics, the various income level groups, the types of housing, et cetera, which even saves it further. We do know, Leanne pursued what we knew to be available at the time, and the PowerPoint that was sent to Leanne does indicate that only the top 28 cities over 14,000 in population, the data will be broken out for those. So obviously we just have Ames. And Leanne, did you manage to get in touch with anybody this morning?
No, he wasn't available.
Okay. Okay, so it is possible that there would be even a little bit more reduction in cost. Of course, keeping in mind that we're going to have to, our consultant will have to break out the data, you know, even the statistical data from what IFA has.
When is IFA's report expected?
February.
Okay.
It's great timing. Okay, and so then we've gone down and we've listed, have listed kind of the steps that we're asking for today in my presentation.
Perfect. So I have three questions,
uh-huh.
But let me start with commending you on what is really a collaborative process to get to this recommendation. So my three issues are this. When do you expect the city of Ames to have their numbers done? I've spoken with Steve Shanker about this. He gave me a timeline. I wondered if it's the same timeline you're here.
I heard by the end of December 2018.
Okay. And he's telling me 18 months to 24 months
okay.
before they're going to have the numbers.
Thank you. That is not what the staff had indicated. Now, let me explain where possibly the discrepancy is a little bit, all right, is that we believe a lot of the data that we'll be using will actually be based on a work product that Vanessa Baker Latimer has to do every 5 years for HUD, okay? And so we're not going to need all of that information that she's having to assemble for this huge report. Her report is due December of 18.
Okay,
so whereas the full planning staff is definitely feels by the time they're done, it'll be 24 months. So that may be where the discrepancy is about which data do we anticipate pulling.
Okay. And how important, as part of that first question, how important do you see the Ames numbers? Whenever we get them,
right.
How important are they to the overall report? Can the report stand on its own without the Ames numbers?
The report, I believe, for individual communities outside of Ames will be able to stand to a certain, but Brenda, if you have any input, this would be a great time to come up. I know that we have had discussions about the scope of this report also offering predictive trends. And Ames information, I believe, is going to be needed for true accuracy, I mean, really fine-pointing predictive trends. And we may not be able to get all of that down to that detail for the communities surrounding Ames. Of course, that's backed on, they're working on a comprehensive plan. And that may take 24 months. So they're, we are looking at still trying to get this done in the 12 months, okay, basically going through December of 18. And that would be something that I think maybe staff could do to integrate later, or we look at the consultant then in 2019 coming in and maybe updating predictives on that. But they've got a big chore ahead of them. So the 24 months to actually get a comprehensive plan will be impressive. The last one they did in 97, I think, started in 93. Okay. So the numbers I think we'll have, and it's important to put them in, but the final predictive impact, probably more for maybe west of the interstate, might be the final piece that we won't have 100%. We'll have to go with what's available as of, like, December 2018. Okay?
Sure. No, that was still one. Second one, yeah, that's two part question.
Okay.
Second question is, has the Florida County Housing Trust Fund Board weighed in on this concept at all? And what's their position?
Well, I told them about it. I said that this was coming. I told them that we were thinking about doing this back when we first discussed it back in July. In fact, I talked when I was still on the task force of the trust fund, mentioned that this was something I was going to be proposing. So that's how far back it's gone. They and they said, oh, that would be good. I think, and then, of course, they were still compiling their information to make their application to IFA, okay, at the time, all right? So I last reminded them about this, where we were with the housing needs study last week, which is how then they had brought up the administrator from Polk County, and he said, oh, by the way, did you know? And that's how we learned about the IFA study, okay? So they have not weighed in pro or con other than the task force people saying, geez, we think that would be a good idea. So
part two of that question
is no.
Wouldn't it be good if this newly formed, not even fully formed, Housing Trust Fund Board had an opportunity to weigh in on the direction we were taking?
Oh, absolutely. I would think, okay. And so...